This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Mark Thompson. How are you, Mark?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
Good. Good to have you back on the show. Last week we were talking about Gisborne and various things going on in Gisborne, but this week I want to talk a wee bit about some of the supply problems with had New Zealand and Gisborne, etc., and also a little bit about that lovely Albarino that we've just had a glass of. So, oversupply. Let's talk about that. I spoke to TW Wines, Paul and Geordie, and Geordie's just pulled out some grapes. Milton's just ripped out all their grapes. Which is a bit of a worry because you would think that, for me in the UK, that was the brand that had the most presence
and the most clout.
Yeah, it was Milton. And if, you know, fair enough, they want to retire, but you'd think that they'd be able to sell a winery as a going concern.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about Milton's because I don't know the full story, but what Annie has said is pretty much true. You know, the fact that they have retired. They did receive some offers for the vineyards for, you know, over about the course of about 3 years. I'm aware that they did receive some. They didn't sell for whatever reason. That's a different reason to what we have in New Zealand at the moment, which is an oversupply of grapes. Looking at the statistics, we've still got increased sales in core markets of America and the US, which are our two main ones. Massive increases in sales from a small base in Asia, China and South Korea of all places. Big increases there. However, the pace of planting has increased more than the increase in sales has. So we're now at a stage where we need to have an equilibrium between the two. And putting on my New Zealand hat, if you like, that a lot of that growth has been driven from Marlborough, but the effects are far-reaching. And it's not just New Zealand that is struggling with this. However, we are an export-driven country. So with the tiny population, we have to export, and that's everything. It's not just wine. It's, you know, everything from trees to sheep to fruit to apples. Name a primary producer. And again, this is not unique to New Zealand. The rest of the world is also going through and grubbing out vineyards left, right and centre because the consumption levels are dropping and the pickup in the new generation of consumers hasn't been as big as it has in previous years or in previous generations.
That said, though, New Zealand should be protected because a lot of the drop has been in red wines, not white wines.
Yep.
So New Zealand is predominantly a white wine producer. So the drop hasn't been as much. You've seen uptakes in the USA, as you said. And the New Zealand dollar is absolute. I'm loving it. I'm coming over from England, and it's the first time I can afford to go out and drink.
You imagine how I feel coming across from the other direction.
Yeah, well,
costs three times the amount that it.
You've had it for 15 years, mate. I've been living in England. Every time I come home, I'm going, it's how much?
Yeah, exactly.
So I would have thought with the weaker dollar, that would have helped drive exports.
Yeah, I think it has. Just my own small little pool. We've had buyers coming back to us from England, that had dropped us because the prices were too high, but they realised that the wines that they were picking up from other from other countries didn't have the same quality aspect. So they've been able to pick up some good wines at a very reasonable price and are now really looking at their marketing side of things to maximise these opportunities that they have.
What's going on with the wines? I've noticed, for example, Jane and I, we really weren't doing any wine things for the first 4 weeks in New Zealand. We were avoiding it like the plague, just because we wanted to spend time with our kids, and our kids were absolutely sick of going to wineries with us. But one of the things I've noticed is we picked up the old wine from the supermarket, and some of the brands that I drink in the UK, in New Zealand, they're like $15 a bottle. In England, they're like 15 quid a bottle.
Yeah.
And that's like twice the price.
Mm.
And I cannot understand how the wine can be twice the price. Because, you know, in the old days anyway, last time I looked at the numbers, it used to be like 50p to ship a bottle of wine to England. You got your VAT on top, and you got your duty, which is a little bit higher. But that's nowhere near enough to double the price. So, first of all, what does it cost to ship a single bottle of wine in a container to the Britain? Do you know that off the top of your head?
No, don't know that one. So, I can't help you with that one. The main reason for not knowing that is that we sell our wines ex-winery. So, our customers pay the freight. So, I actually don't know what the freight cost is. The other interesting one is that I think you look at a US dollar, a Kiwi dollar, a Great Britain pound, they all basically can buy the same thing. You know, as we've said, that my wife was over in England. She was paying £5.50 for a coffee on the high street. She buys the same coffee here for $5.50. Now, that's actually equivalent to £2, if you like, or £3. So it's almost the McDonald's thing. A McDonald's will cost you, I don't know, $6, say, in New Zealand. It might be £6 in England. And $6 in the United States. So it's not that dollar translates to being converted into another currency.
Oh, no, I can follow that. I can follow, particularly when there's a high labor component from the local market. But a bottle of wine at a supermarket doesn't have really a lot of labor involved in that. You know, if you go to a restaurant, you got a lot of staff who need to be paid at the going rate, whatever that is.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand why some of the wines are twice the price, you know, when you look at exchange rates. And certainly some of the wines for sure are going through different channels. So I'm comparing a wine that's in the supermarket in New Zealand to a wine that's being bought in by a wholesaler and then sold in retail.
Sold Majestics or something like that.
No, not even Majestic. It's going down the restaurant channel. I'll give you the wine that I'm acutely aware of is Wairoa River Sauvignon Blanc.
Yep.
And I've seen it in New World which is a supermarket, New World's a supermarket in New Zealand, $15. And I thought, do you know what? That's a pretty good Sauvignon Blanc. I rate that as a solid Sauvignon Blanc that does everything you want. It's like Wairoa dominated, so it's got lots of passion fruit and ripe fruit. It's not some lean hour-teary thing that I don't really like those wines as much. And then you look at it in the UK, and I buy it from a wholesaler, but when we put on a normal 30-35% margin, it comes in at £15 a bottle.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going,
That's twice the price of what it is here.
Yeah, and I just can't see how it works.
Well, surely if you look at shipping wines halfway around the world, the taxation, talking to our buyers, the taxation rates that came into effect, I think 18 months ago, 2 years ago now, have certainly made a huge impact on the wines. And we've also spoken to the buyers and they've showed us the model, and the smallest component is of the price of everything is the wine itself. So even if they got the wine for nothing, they would still have these costs attached to it. So that seems to me to, I don't know if that answers your question, but I think it's more to do with the different cost structures. And, you know, surely we should have a cheaper wine. Surely we should be able to produce a cheaper wine here in New Zealand than we can ship it to the other side of the world.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's move on from that, because that's a little bit of I might do a little bit of work on that, actually, and just try.
That would be really interesting to find out,
So we're talking about oversupply in New Zealand. Before we did the interview, we had a bit of a chat. And one of the things you're saying is that the oversupply, you gave us a number about how much you thought there was too much produced in New Zealand.
Well, there was. So last year, the unofficial figure was 100,000 tonnes of grapes were left on the vines and weren't picked. So that was a twofold reason. One was that we'd gone back to putting caps on, so you could only pick to a certain number of tonnes per hectare, so 12 or 14 tonnes or whatever it happened to be. And the second thing was that even if people did come through and offer to pick those grapes, they had nowhere to process it. So New Zealand being a relatively young winemaking country, Sauvignon Blanc has always been a wine that, apart from a few examples, that was made and sold in the year that it was produced. So therefore, you didn't need to store wine. Suddenly, when you're in an oversupply situation, you need to store wine. That means that the wineries are full, so they can't bring in as much wine again. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you like, which will continue on until such time as we get back into balance, which will happen.
Normally, when you've got a cap on production, you would do a green harvest earlier in the season, reduce the number of grapes. Once you get through your frost period and you know, okay, we're good to go, you would do a green harvest, and then you can control how much you're pulling off per hectare.
Yep. There's two things that are an issue there. The first one is that just because we've got through the frost period doesn't mean that we're out of the clear. You know, there's still hail events, floods,
cyclones,
swarms of locusts, any other biblical things that you can think of. That's the first one. The second one is that you also need to have a very good handle on your crop estimates, and that's still not a great science here in New Zealand at the moment. We still struggle to get within 10% of our crop estimates. And thirdly, green thinning is a very expensive exercise. So you'd go through and maybe go through and do what we call a shake. So just post-flowering and pre-bunch closure, you actually go through and run a harvester across the grapevines. And what this does is that it removes a lot of the berries that maybe weren't going to hold on anyhow. And it also removes what they call trash, which is all of the little pieces of the flowers that have died and gone inside the bunches. What it does is it's an amazing bit of kit that actually stops major rot events happening later down the track.
Is that because all the petals are jammed in there?
Yeah, so all the little sepals from flowering actually jam inside the bunch, and that ends up being a site for the botrytis to start. Yeah. So you could be looking at a perfectly fine bunch of grapes, and then 2 days later, it's actually rotted from the inside out.
You only do that when you need to do a green harvest, or?
No, that's something that is part of the, especially in bad seasons, we're not having a bad season yet, but in a compromised season, it's a very good husbandry to do.
Yeah, okay. And how much fruit do you lose when you do that?
Probably about 10%.
10%, okay.
Between 5 and 10%, depending on the take-up of the grapes and the bunch architecture as well.
Yeah, because different grape varieties are looser and different clones.
And you don't need to do it with everything, but you know, the grapes that produce traditionally a very tight bunch, like Pinot Gris and Sauvignon Blanc, do require it. You know, Chardonnay tends to be a bit more bulletproof and a little bit more open as well.
Mm. But you don't go through and have someone with a pair of secateurs going through and chop.
Nah, just not economic, really. You know, when your margins are so slim as they are, the cost of that is huge. You know, you've been in Melbourne and, you know, looked across at thousands of hectares of grapes.
Yeah.
We just don't have the labour to do it.
Just on the labour, COVID.
Yep.
That was a bit of a problem because there's a lot of itinerant workers that used to come into New Zealand during COVID. What the heck happened there?
So what really happened there was we managed to go ahead and harvest. But those itinerant workers that came over from the islands, they had to stay here because they couldn't get back. So we still had a labour force that could get through and do vintage. But once we'd got through...
Did they have to come into the country?
They were already in the country.
Oh, they were already in the country.
Already in the country because they'd come in for pruning and were staying through till picking.
Nice.
Yeah, so we already had them in the country. They couldn't leave. So we then... The next round, because they normally only come in for a year, for a season, we couldn't get the next lot in until whenever it happened to be. I think it wasn't until the next season's pruning.
So did they stay in the country?
Stayed in the country.
So you had a workforce here?
Yeah. So we already had all of the workers that were coming in to work in the wineries. They were already in situ because the lockdown happened...
March, was it?
March, I think, yeah. So we already had all of the workers in the vineyards. They were already here. And... The people that were there that had finished pruning but were still waiting to go in and do hand picking, they were still here as well.
What did the government do? Did they say, look, you can stay in the country even though you've got a short-term work visa?
Yeah.
Well, that was pretty decent of them.
Yeah, well, they didn't really have an option. I mean, the only other option was to start chartering planes and fly them home. So,
yeah.
Because planes weren't flying.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So, yeah. Oh, well, I'll give them something to do for a... What are they doing in the off-season, do you know?
They go back home and...
No, normally, but what did they do during COVID? Did they work as well?
Yeah, they would have worked. as much as possible. I mean, there's still plenty of work to be done. And, you know, as you said, around the country, there's not just grapevines. You know, we've got a huge apple, pear, kiwi fruit, cherries, apricots. There's lots of things. People travel around the country.
Let's talk about your Albarino, because we touched on it.
I think we just said that it was a rich style of Albarino.
And Albarino is a grape variety that, you know, last time I heard about, really paid attention to Albarino, was about 10 years ago, and it was being planted up, but there wasn't a lot around.
Yeah.
How much is around, and how popular is it?
There's not a huge amount around. I tried to dig out this today, but I couldn't find the exact details. More Albarino is grown in Gisborne than in any other region around New Zealand at the moment. It's not huge. It's about 70 hectares. But that 70-odd hectares punches well above its weight on the international stage, at least. You know, we have sales for that into different foreign countries, let's just say. And also local market as well. It's selling really, really well.
To me, it
suits the Gisborne climate very well, because even though it ripens later, it's very thick-skinned, so we don't have as many issues with mildew and botrytis. At the end of the 23 cyclone season that we had, and you know, they'd gone through hell and back, these grapevines. You know, we had ones that were underwater for weeks on end. The Albarino came through fine right at the end of it.
Really?
Yeah, so it was like 10 weeks after the rain, and it was still as sound as a bell. Incredible. So it's pretty bulletproof variety.
Galithia, where it's grown, gets 1.5 meters of rain a year.
Really?
Yeah, that's the sort of rainfall you expect in Rias Baixas.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is wet.
Yeah, that is wet. Well, Gisborne traditionally only gets a meter of rain.
Oh, well, it's dry, isn't it? It's probably dehydrating on the vines.
Exactly. So, first of all, you've got a grape that can handle the conditions that we've got here, as opposed to Sauvignon Blanc, which tends to be quite thin-skinned and can, in winemaking terms, fall over pretty quickly if you don't keep an eye on it. And it's got a lovely acid profile. As we've discussed prior to talking online here, we've done a few things in the winery to extract as much flavour as we can out of the wine.
Skin contact,
lees stirring. Again, we haven't done any barrel work with these. We're thinking about whether or not we should look at doing that down the track.
Old barrels, though?
Yeah, definitely old barrels, not new.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll soak up some nice Chardonnay with some new barrels. And, yeah, I would say third fill would be lovely, only from a texture point of view.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a lot of texture at the moment. It's more texture here than from the real spacious ones I've had.
Right. Oh, that's good to know. Yeah. And, again, because it's a new variety, I'm still learning how to make it. The growers are still learning how to grow it. It's the biggest problem that we have with it is that it's very low cropping. So we need to get more per tonne for the grapes to make it worthwhile for the growers to grow it, which means that it does sell for a premium.
What's it, tonnes per hectare, do you?
Yeah, so to give you an example, we could probably crop Sauvignon Blanc here at 18 to 20 tonnes per hectare. Maybe 6 tonnes per hectare for Albarino.
Oh, that's quite low.
Yeah. So, you know, it's 3 times less.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. What's, I think Central Otago Pinot Noir, is it 4 tonnes an acre?
Yeah, four tonnes per hectare probably.
4 tonnes a hectare.
4 to 6 tonnes per hectare, which is like 2 tonnes per acre.
Yeah. They struggle with profitability, even though the wines are really good.
Yeah.
And they get a premium price for them. It's really hard to make money in Central.
Oh, it is. It is indeed. Yeah.
All right, okay. Well, it's a nice wine. I hope it works. It's certainly better than the Sauvignon Blancs I've had from Gisborne. You know, I've only ever drunk Gisborne Chardonnays.
Yeah.
To be fair, if I'm after a Chardonnay from New Zealand, I look for a Gisborne Chardonnay.
Yep.
If I'm running a tasting and I want to show highlight New Zealand.
I think that would be a very, very good call.
It saves the Gisborne man.
Yeah. Living in Gisborne at the moment. The Sauvignon Blanc, if we could touch on that as well. Because we are quite a lot further north, so therefore warmer, the challenge is to try and get that Sauvignon Blanc flavour into grapes before, or to capture that Sauvignon Blanc flavour in those grapes before we start dropping acid, and before, so that we lose that lovely acid, so you don't end up with a wine that tastes flat.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they've been fresh. They've definitely been fresh, that's for sure. Okay. Okay, Mark, that's fabulous talking to you. And that's the last interview we've had with you guys. Nice couple of interviews there. And cheers very much.
Lovely. Let's go and enjoy another glass of wine.